Welcome to Resilience Matters. This is Heather Vaucouche. Today we will meet a young woman with an extensive background of volunteering as a field officer and trainer in humanitarian programs in Syria. Due to the sensitive nature of her work, we will not identify her by full name, so for the purposes of this program, she will be called Layla. In 2012, while still in high school, Layla began volunteering with the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, or SARC, and subsequently has supported many populations, including internally displaced persons, or IDPs. Thank you so much for joining us, Layla, and can you give us some background into how you originally got started doing humanitarian work?
For me, I joined the Syrian Arab Red Crescent as a volunteer in my town, my small village town, actually. It's where about 6,000 people had fled. We were only 15 volunteers at that time and have to cover all sections between relief, produce, support, services, PSS, first aid, healthcare, etc. At that time, I was just 16 years old and the youngest volunteer at SARC. My first day were responding to the IDPs from Dareya. It's the small village next to Sahnaya, and we responding them in Sahnaya shelters. We were working for more than 18 hours per day. We were surrounded with fear and pain, but we had to continue. We felt for everyone and felt responsible for everyone. We were cooking, provide the baby's food, bring the water, help with health issues and security. Continuously, we were responding. In 2013, the number of IDPs started to increase in shocking rate. I was in the graduation year from the high school at that time, and my all time after school was with SARC. Actually, my life was built there.
It must be extremely difficult dealing with all of that inhumanity and destruction, especially within the context of being in danger yourself. So, I mean, have you also had access to the red areas? In short, those considered too dangerous or remote to visit?
Our office was bombed several times. It was really dangerous for us in Sahnaya, but we continued. In 2014, I get a new position in rural Damascus branch with SARC as a technical and reporting officer in relief section. I witnessed how the suffering was expanding over rural Damascus from Al-Kalamon, West Kalamon, and East Ghouta and West Ghouta. My first access to the red areas ways in it was in 2014 to Al-Muqaddamiya. It's a small town in West Ghouta. We were entering with a convoy of food and non-food items for more to 100,000 people in cooperation with ICRC. The scale of destruction, suffering, and needs was incredible. It's unbelievable, actually. I could remember that I was going to cry at the first second, but again and again, we just must continue. My field visits were weekly to all the rural area, except for the red areas at that time, which were many. Although we already have sub-branches and volunteers in this red area, but the access was impossible.
I understand that you also have been integral to the Bread Project, delivering humanitarian food aid to those in red areas and in other dangerous, disadvantaged places. Can you tell us a little bit about that work?
In 2015, my branch chose me to be the coordinator of the PREP project, which was one of the most important programs in SARC, actually, because we distributed the most important item for the Syrian community, which is the bread bags. In 2016, we started entering the red areas. And the first convoy to enter was to Madaya. Madaya and Zabadani, actually after the siege 2016. We worked for 24 hours non-stop. There were no lights. However, people need the food in any way, and they didn't care if there's light or no light. It was really hard to see this suffering, but as a worker in the humanitarian field, we feel always be a part of people suffering, whether in feelings or responding. In 2016, and after many trainings, I became a disaster management trainer. It was always great to pass our experiences to the other volunteers who are motivated to give their best to help. It's the cycle of solidarity. As I was the Bread Project coordinator and disaster management and field communication trainer, I could enter all the red areas between 2017 and 2018. But every time at checkpoints in high-risk area, our hearts were beating, but our mission and determination helped us to continue.
Fear is entirely understandable when working in such dangerous and precarious situations. So how has your work developed in the years since then, and how do you deal with those emotions?
In 2018, we became the first responsible organization for evacuation process from East Ghouta. We had mixed feelings at that time. One had the pain and sadness to see these people forced to leave their houses and farms. On the other hand, we knew at least they will be safer more than. I knew every moment could be the last one, and used to call my mom to tell her that I really love her and to be proud of me whatever happened with me. Fear was all we knew, but again and again, we have to continue. 50,000 bread bags was distributed every day from mid-March 2018 to mid-May 2018 in Esther and Ghouta, and a lot of in the shelters, actually, in Adra, Dwer, and Dumer, and all of this by 30 volunteers for our project.
Wow, I mean, 50,000 bread bags delivered every day in those areas and by 30 volunteers. That is really incredible. So now, how are the volunteers trained? And what motivates you personally to do this kind of work?
At the end of 2018, more than 100 volunteers were getting trainings in these red areas, and in 5 workshops. Now I'm working as a trainer and a field officer here in Syria. And after all these years, I discovered my passion in the field. And that's why I changed my studies, actually, from civil engineering to public relations and communication to assist my work. For me, the humanitarian work, it's not just the work, like every work we do it in our life. For me, it's a lifestyle. So because of that, I'm in the 10 years of my humanitarian work.
How did you support your own resilience in working in such a very difficult situation?
Yeah, that was hard, really, in this last 10 years. For me, resilience always grows from experiencing difficulties and facing challenges. In my personal experience working in this field since I was 16 years old, helped me becoming stronger and more patient. It has its downsides as well, when I felt totally frustrated and collapsed. But every time, the smile, just to say the smile on the faces of people who I help, this feeling is maybe the most priceless for us as a volunteers in the humanitarian work. The feeling that I contributed to their comfort and needs, it helped me to stand up again and again and just to continue my work. Surely being always away from family because of my hard work conditions, it's difficult, but some simple things could help, like for me, watching football games short going with my friends to bring again the feeling of normality and balance in such unbalanced situation here in Syria.
That's a really important point, creating a feeling of balance when one is faced with a very imbalanced situation. So how do you and your team create a sense of safety and balance, not only for the IDPs, but also for the volunteer staff itself, who are also facing these devastating realities every day? What kinds of messages do you try to communicate, and by what methods?
Just stay safe and feel safe, because they are going from their, they leave their homes, or they going back to their destroyed home. These mobile teams make activities with them in the basic level. Then, if we feel that we face specific mental health problems or problems with children or women, we try to communicate with someone working just in PSS sections to give them advices or treatment, talking or between medicine, between everything. So this is what we will do with the IDPs or the local community here in Syria. We know that all the volunteers which works in the humanitarian work is a part of this situation, and they face the hard situation, and they are affected by the war. They are affected by this war, and they have a mental health problem. So we do something like workshops with them. We call that staff care, or they have real problems. They go to the specific people which work in PSS and told them their problems. And sometimes we tell them to stop working for a while, maybe for a week, for 4 days, to go on vacation.
Those seem like some great approaches to psychosocial support, or PSS. Now, how is the general topic of mental health addressed in your humanitarian work? What resources do you have, not only for the IDPs, but again, also for the volunteer staff?
Okay, in the first years between 2012 and 2014, the mental health term was not common. But during the first period of war, the level of disaster and the nature of responding, of over-responding, was beyond thinking about mental health. But in our humanitarian work, we did first aid PSS. I can give you an example, a very simple example, just to listen in the first time, just to listen and to listen to listen. To do this with all the IDPs or the local community when we responding, and we tried actually to give all the volunteers which working in the all sections, from relief to first aid to healthcare and the emergency response, these workshops. But this is one of our challenge actually, that we didn't do the workshops of this first aid social support in the right time. At that time, in 2012 to 2015, we need this workshop. We didn't know, but we couldn't do for everyone. We tried. We tried to reach the all volunteers to give this how to listen, to talk, what is the good words with the IDPs, especially in the first pilots, actually, what we can do, what we cannot do, what we can say, what we cannot say, something like this. And this is one of the common activities in social support, first aid social support.
So I'm hearing that getting targeted, appropriate training resources is one of the challenges that you face during your very important humanitarian work, especially as the nature of the conflict changes. What other kinds of challenges do you face right now?
Yeah, actually, over these years of my work in the field, There were many NGOs and INGOs involved in the situation. We have got financial aid, actually, from several resources. Now, as Syria is not in the international attention spot, the resources become less and less. Nevertheless, it's not the only problem, but some internal challenges, like who get the high managing positions here in Syria. Mm-hmm. And the conflict over these positions had created a gap in the function of these resources. The limitation of our work due to armed conflict needs a high level of cooperation. We thought in 2018 that the war is about to end and the humanitarian work requirements will be different now and get into the rebuilding and recovery period. But after then, because of the economic sanctions, which hit the people very strongly, especially the IDPs, we had to return to the emergency response to support them with basic needs from food and water. I believe that we need more on-the-ground researchers to respond to the disaster situation on all levels. The need is for financial aid-sponsored program designed to meet the basic needs, but also more training programs to assist learning and coping with the different difficulties raised by the situation, and especially health and mental health care. So for me, it's really important to have societies or programs work just in to give a training or workshops between the trainers and the ITPs and the local community, just to share the information and the experience between them and give them the right ways to improve their health and their mental health.
So I'm hearing that innovative training programs are necessary to help with coping and capacity building in psychosocial areas, and they need to be adapted to and designed by local populations within a framework of technology appropriate for the given target group. Now, in a related area, your generation has faced untold difficulties given these many, many years of conflict. What impact do you see moving forward, and what kinds of interventions would be of support?
In the general situation, as students at universities and a new worker in our community, during all these years of war, we live the most important moments of our life in war. Actually, we were children just 15 years when the war was started, and now we are 25 years. It's really hard to describe these hard years when we grow up there. After all these years of war, this war affected the stone and the people in Syria, and its effect in the people was more strongly. So our society was become in a state of chaos on the physical level, or of the generation that have matured during the years of war. The feeling of belonging of to our homeland and the desire to build it and preserve its property has decreased in an alarming way, and this is very dangerous, that the people didn't want to rebuild Syria, that our generation didn't want to stay here. Yeah, I know this is. They have their excuses, and the situation is too hard. But this is really dangerous. The desire of revenge and the spread of crimes between young people are among the biggest challenge facing our generation. I thought that rebuilding the human interior is the most thing we have to make it here in Syria. Yeah, we need food, we need many things of physical things, but to rebuild the human interior is the most thing we have to do it. We have to try to do it.
Rebuilding the human interior, well, that's a very strong image, and of course it connects directly with the topic of resilience. Now, you also mentioned revenge and crime as potential dangers to society by youth who see themselves as disconnected who potentially have suffered mental injury during this conflict and have lost hope. What kinds of things can be done not only for youth, but also for the volunteer staff carrying out this humanitarian work?
Yeah, actually, this is an important point about the workers, because after all these years, we're talking about the IDPs and the local community. And yeah, it's the goals of our work. But actually, to give the right responding, we have to take care about who are giving this support. So after all these years, I think we have to make two things in the first level. For staff cares and for the volunteers or the workers in which works in the field, they always ask us why we didn't get the trainings in the right time. So now we are going, we are going in the rebuild and recovery period. And the most important activities in this time is the social support for both IDPs and staff care. So I thought that, and I think for now, that yeah, we have to give them trainings, not just in the how to do the PSS or the social support for people. I think we have to give them the trainings how to save your lives, not to your physical lives, how to save your mental health, how to save your family's mental health. Because as we say in Life Skills Workshop, you have to start from yourself to give them the good activities and the good ways to be good.
Well, that's a really good point. So the necessity for psychosocial support is important not only during the time of conflict, but indeed during the recovery period as well. Now, Leila, in your opinion, what is the biggest area of support that is necessary for your staff, not only right now, but moving forward for the next couple of years?
They need training. All of our volunteers in humanitarian work have a lack in their information and their experience because we didn't get the right trainings or the enough trainings of our work. So we tried, actually for me, I tried to get trainings, online trainings, to listen from the trainings before me, but it's not enough because I am just one. I can get to the internet, or I have relations, or I have the chance actually to be a trainer and make these relations. But about the volunteers and which works in the field, which was, I think, the most important people of our work, because if we have don't volunteers, we have don't work, and we have to help these volunteers to be good, to feel good, to give us the right work.
So then, in your view, how is it possible to incorporate psychosocial support and mental health and resilience, nonviolence, for example, into your team's humanitarian work at this time? What are some of the training considerations that would begin making an even stronger impact in that regard?
Yeah, actually, I don't think that we can make this rebuilding the human interior in just one day or one year. We have to put this in every program. Every NGO want to do it from 2021 here in Syria. Because, yeah, we need basic services and it's really important. But after all these years, we can still find that if we just completed our work with no planning for mental health issues or the community problems, remember the violence, which all of us is growing with up. So we have to maybe we have 10 years again later to just tell these people that the violence is not the right way to live with in the humanitarian work. Because now we are in the recovery work, in the recovery period, and in disaster management, we say that we have to do the social support and to take care about the mental health in this. period, in the recovery and the rebuild period.
Well, Leila, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and experience with us today. Your work is remarkable and inspiring, and I believe that it's imperative for those of us living in relative safety and comfort to acknowledge the massive resources and efforts that will be necessary in the upcoming steps for recovery, and to acknowledge and also heed the suggestions of those such as you who have been working on the ground locally in very challenging situations for many years. Once again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you again, Heather, to give me the chance to talking about my experience here in Syria and to talking about all my friends and volunteers which work together, which work with me actually here in Syria. Best regards from Damascus, Syria, and hope it will be good things for us.